Okay, we're holding on the bottom of Chazayin Amar Beis, four lines from the bottom. So we started discussing, Mark started discussing yesterday the question of Ovid Inish Dina L'Mafke, the person allowed to take the law into their own hands. And we had a machlokes on it. Rabbi Huda saying no, and Rabbi Nachman saying yes, and the Gemara mentioned thus far that if there's an actual hefted involved, then for sure you can. The question is, if there's no immediate hefted involved. The reason why the Gemara is bringing this in, by the way, is because later on, as we go through the sugya, the Gemara is going to bring in our Mishnah about the guy who put his barrels in the Shulchan Arabim is going to come into play in the course of the discussion. So, Masi Rav Kahana, a Braita says Ben Bagbag Omer. This is the famous Ben Bagbag from Pirkei Avos. Al tikonis lachatzar chaver chalitzel shalchol shalei brishos. Don't go into your neighbor's chaser to take something that belongs to you without his permission. Shemetero elok a ganef, because you may look like a ganef to him. Elo shvoras shinov, but break his teeth. Meaning not literally break his teeth, but in other words, go in, you know, stolt, you know, this is my right, the emerald, and tell him shali ani noto, I'm taking my stuff. Now,
choices. What was he doing there in the first place?
Whatever it was, you lent it to him previously, or whatever, there could be any number of things. Choices points out, evidently we must be talking about, again, there's no pseda, there's no immediate loss if you don't go in right away. Therefore, Ben Bagbag, even though it's true, I mean, Ben Bagbag is phrasing it in the form of good advice. Don't go in because you may look like a ganav, but if there was pseda involved, he wouldn't be giving that good advice. He would just say, you know, well, if it was pseda involved, it wouldn't be a question of how you go in. However you go in, if there's pseda for you, if you're going to lose out by this thing being in it, so obviously we must be talking about there's no pseda. So therefore, it's a question on Rabbi Huda. What do you mean there's no pseda over here? According to Rabbi Huda, loy ovid inish din l'mafke. What do you mean shvoras shina? Omale. So who was it? That he can't take the law into his own hand. So Rabbi Nachman answers him. Omale imcha. With you, meaning do you think this is a good question? Or it actually has a second explanation of imcha that it means that question might as well have stayed with you. It wasn't even worth bringing up. Because Ben Bagbag is a go. Ben Bagbag is a daf yachid. Well, play your rabbanon alay. The rabbanon may well argue with him. Not necessarily is that the case, because if that was indeed the case, then Rav Kahana has no business bringing the question up in the first place. But Rav Yehuda can answer that's how it is. So it's only a daf yachid. And in fact, it's interesting that the poskim, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch and so forth, don't even bring this braisa of Ben Bagbag for pashtus for the reasons the Gemara is saying, that it's only a daf yachid. Rabbi Yana gives a different answer. He says, "My shvoras shina bedin." He doesn't, when it says break his teeth, it doesn't mean you force your way in and take and say I'm coming to take what's rightfully mine. It means take him to Beis Din. In that case, that fits fully with what Rabbi Huda is saying. Even if you say that the Chachamim agree with him, fine. Rabbi Huda has no problem with you taking the guy to Beis Din. He just has a problem with you taking the law into your own hands. The question is, if that's what it means, then the Loshen is not right. The Emerloi, instead of that you should tell him, I'm taking mine, it should be Imrimloi, that should be they, the Basin should tell him. And Shali, I mean, no, what do you mean, saying, I'm taking what belongs to me? Shaloi, who knows him, it should be, the expression would be that Basin will tell the guy, let him in, he's just taking what's rightfully his.
But by the time Beis Din decides, the Hefsted might have happened.
Again, according to Tosfos, there is no Hefsted over here. If there was a Hefsted, there'd be no reason for the Gemara to bring up the question.
Other cases. No, absolutely no Hefsted.
Yeah, you can do it now, you can do it next week, whatever. You have time to go to Beis Din, and you have time to go to Beis Din.
I'm talking about a case where there's no Hefsted immediately, but they may become a Hefsted down the road, let's say a week from now.
Is there enough time to go to Beis Din? The key question about whether there's Hefsted or not is there time to go to Beis Din and get the matter adjudicated without there being a Hefsted? If not, then it's considered a Hefsted, yeah. So Kasha, so okay, if you answer according to Rav Yana, you know, actually it says on the side, if you use his answer that we're talking about going to Beis Din, then yeah, the Loshen of the Braita is not really very precise. Okay, Kasha. Next, Tashma. Suppose that one shur climbs on top of another shur to kill it. These oxen belong to two different people, obviously. The one who owns the ox that's on the bottom came and pulled out his from underneath. The nuffel elyon mess, and so the one on top that was climbing on top of it fell down and died. Potter. So he's potter from the hezek for the ox.
Yeah,
for the, yeah. Because he, well, that's the question. Mylav Gamur Delekab Seder. Now, shouldn't we assume that the situation over here is that the top ox was moored? In which case, suppose that, now let's suppose then, suppose that the top ox had gone and killed the bottom one. Because it's a moored, and the Rashba points out, evidently, we're also talking about this Edim, you have all the, everything that's necessary to go to Beis Din, you're not going to end up losing anything out of it. Because you'll go to Beis Din, the Edim will come and say that he was a moored and whatever, you'll get back 100% of what you lost. There's no Seder involved. Well, no, the question is, we're saying that he's Potter. If we say that the animal is a moored, why should he be Potter? What do you mean? According to Rav Nachman, Obadinish Dinah L'Nachshei, no problem. According to Rav Yehuda, Loy Obadinish Dinah L'Nachshei, don't take the law into your own hands. Why? In this is a case where you shouldn't be taking the law into your own hands. So your ox will be killed. Big deal. You'll take the guy to Beis Din, and he'll pay 100% of the damage because his ox was a moored. And you'll go buy a new ox. And yet we're saying Ovid Inish Dinah L'Nafshei. That fits according to Rav Nachman. It does not really fit according to Rav Yehuda. The answer is like, the Tam, the Ikab Seder. No, you could answer very simply that we're talking about that the top ox was a Tam. You stand to lose because even if everything checks out in Beis Din, you're only going to get back 50% of what, maximum 50% of what you lost. Francis adds another detail also. That, the detail comes up. What? Chatinezek, yeah. Okay, the question is, Ihochi Ema Sefer. So if you're going to say that, we're talking about the animal was a tam, look at the next part of the Braith. So the Braith continues, Dochfei La'olyonu Meschayev. What happens instead of pulling out your ox and then the other one falls down on its own? If you pushed the top ox and made it fall down, then you chayev. Now, the Yibitama, my chayev. Now you're back to the question. If it's a tam, and there is Seder involved over here because you're going to lose half of the value of the ox. Why should you be any more chayev if you pushed off the top ox than if you schlepped out your own? Which Tosfos points out the question is like this. I can understand, in a way, it's easier to understand if the animal was a muad, because then we can say like this. You pulled out your animal, your potter, fine, obadinish dinah l'nafshei. Nevertheless, when it comes to pushing off the other animal, you could have. It wasn't you. Instead of pushing off the other animal directly and directly causing its death, you could have done it indirectly. Pull out your animal. Maybe the other one will be killed, and maybe not. If we're talking about a muad, the question is that if it's tam, on the face of it, since it's an emergency, if this continues on for another minute, your animal is going to be dead and you're going to lose at least 50% of its value. So again, maximum you're going to get is 50%. Fine, then we can say, if the attacking animal is a tam, fine, I can understand you didn't have the presence of mind to think, should I pull out mine, should I push off his, whatever, just get it done as fast as possible so my animal stays alive and I don't have a law. But if it's talking about a muad, which we just wanted to say, in order to make it fit according to the Yehuda, we have to say the attacking animal... If we said, as we assumed to begin with, that the animal is a muad and the braisa only fits according to Rav Nachman, fine. So then when it comes to a muad, given that, you're not going to be suffering a pseudo because ultimately you will get back everything that you lost, then nezek shalim, then fine. We can distinguish between what you should have taken care to pull out your ox rather than push off the other ox. Mashenkin, if you say it's a tam, which is what you need in order to work. Because if you pull out your ox, the other ox may or may not die. You at least haven't touched it directly.
And if it dies, you're still going to get the...
No, but what's it? If you pull out your ox, you're not responsible for what happens to the ox. You pulled out yours. You're entitled to do that.
Right.
The other ox dropped. The other ox fell down and died. Not your problem. Not your problem. Exactly. Whereas, again, when it comes to a muad, you can argue that there is that distinction. Better pull out yours rather than push off the other one, because even if you take the extra few seconds to pull out yours, even if in the interim your ox would have been killed, you don't stand to lose anything. You should have taken that care. But if you say that it's a tam, it's an emergency situation. You stand to lose. Why should it make a difference whether you pushed off the other one or whether you pulled out yours? Yeah. The answer is, so that's the question. And the answer is, as a matter of fact, yes. Why are we saying in the second part of the Braisa that if you pushed off the top ox, then you chayev at the tam? The answer is, even in that case, yes. Yes, because you could have pulled out yours instead of pushing off the other one. You didn't. Therefore, even if we assume that it's a case of a tam, you can still say there is that distinction. Yes, you stand to have a pseda, but you could have taken a second over there to pull out yours rather than pushing off the other one, and therefore the braisa can declare you chayav in that statement. So you can't prove from this braisa one way or the other about this machlokes. Tashma. Come, let's prove from another case. The Braita says, "I'm a malach chasar chaveroi kade yain v'kadeshem." And if somebody fills up his neighbor's chaser with barrels of wine or barrels of oil, bala chaser meshabav v'yotz meshabav v'nichnas. So the owner of the chaser, the other guy put it there illegally without his permission. The owner of the chaser is now allowed to break his way to go out and break his way to come in. Now, on the face of it, if we talk. It depends.
Thank you.
It depends. If we talk about when it comes to getting out of his house, that's a pseida. How else is he supposed to get out? When it's talking about coming into his chaser, there's a couple of different variations of how to look at it among the Mephoshim. One way of looking at it is that, yeah, there'd be a difference. It's fine, you know, when it comes to going out of its chaser, that's a real emergency. How's he supposed to get out? When it comes to going in, fine, you know, maybe it's not such a, maybe it's, or maybe the other way.
The other way also.
Or maybe the other way. But, okay. But the Maharam points out another detail also. The expression, Meshabba v'yotz, Meshabba v'nichnas, doesn't seem to imply that he can only break the barrels that are necessary for him to get in and out. It sounds like he can even break a wider area in order to get in and out comfortably.
Just enough to get in.
No, not just enough to get in. Meshabav and Yotz Maram says Maram in the back of the Gemara says that it implies that you can break even more. So why? There's no say. Fine, you can break one or two of them to be able to squeeze through. Why should you be able to break three or four of them so you can get in and out comfortably? There's no pseida involved over there. Again, according to Reb Nachman, fine, doesn't matter whether there's pseida or not. But according to Reb Yehuda, that it only works for pseida. Why would that be? Tosfos, by the way, points out when it comes to the oxen, there's not really more of a tircha involved in schlepping out your ox than there is in pushing off the other one. Therefore, we're saying that you were responsible to schlep out yours rather than pushing off the other one. When it comes to the barrels, it's a question between breaking them versus stacking them up. You can't expect the guy to take the bother to stack them up. That you don't expect.
When
him
you
to
say
do.
There's no more work to take it. To take your ox from pushing the other one, maybe not more work, but there's maybe more danger.
Well, that's why we assume. That's why we thought to assume maybe at first that there might be that distinction, and we said that not. Okay, anyway, the point is that we see that he can break his way in and out. So on the face of it, then even when there's no hefsid, again, there are different ways of looking at it. Either going out is not either the fact that he can't get in at the moment, maybe is not such a hefsid, or the fact that he can break a larger area, whatever. So again, that works according to Reb Nachman, doesn't work according to Reb Yehuda. It means a case where there is a hefsed. It means, for example, that he can break his way to get out to Beis Din, to take the other guy to Beis Din. So fine, that's a hefsed, because he has to get the guy to Beis Din somehow. And what would be a case where he breaks his way to get back in would be, for example, let's say the guy counterclaims in Beis Din. What are you talking about? That chaser belongs to me. I have every right to put my barrels in there. Well, then you have to go back home and find your deed. So then, there's an actual hefsed involved. So then for sure, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can break your way through. Because when there's seder, then Rabbi Yehuda agrees. Yeah.
So they argue only when there's no seder.
That's what we said at the beginning of the sugya yesterday. Yeah. Tashma, come, let's bring another case. A braisa says, minayin l'nirtza shekola lo yom. How do we know an eved nirtza, an eved ivri whose ear was pierced and stays on till yovel? How do we know that when the time is up, when yovel comes, and his master is imploring him, he's pleading with him, get out already. And the guy doesn't want to, the guy still wants to stay on.
Why does he want?
Because he has a, whatever, we'll see in a few lines, wait. And in the course of the argument, the master hits him and wounds him, and wounds him. Show Potter. How do we know that this master is Potter for having hit him? Tamad Lomer, because the Potter says, you should not take a ransom to return. The simple meaning of the Potter is that if somebody has been sentenced to go to the Arden Miklos for killing Bashogig, don't take a ransom from him, don't take money instead to allow him to stay back home. He has to go to the Arden Miklos. That's his kapara. but that we doubt. And the word loshu, so Rashi gives two explanations. One is that loshu can also mean to return, as in he's returning to his dad's situation, being an eved. So for loshu, there is no payment that's extracted for somebody for trying to prevent somebody from returning, from trying to prevent an eved from returning to his avdus. So you wounded him. You're normally, you would be hired for certain payments for that nezek and then fire and so forth. Here you're not. Then Rashi says another explanation.
There's no payment because
Avin Inish didn't have nafshe. Wait, that's the point why we're bringing that in. Anyway, Rashi gives another explanation that loshu is, we can also darshan as if it said loshov. Somebody who ought to be v'shov al mishpachta, the pasuk says, I never did, he should return to his family when it comes yovel. This guy doesn't want to. You hit him, loistik hukofa, basin should not extract any penalties or payments from the master for doing that.
To get him to go back.
When he hit him in the course of trying to get him to go back to his family, yeah. Loistik hukofa, loshov, yeah. So, on the face of it, now, is it loshov meaning that he should have been returning home? So, the point is, lachora, again, this is a case of Ovid Inish Din Lanakshay. We're saying that there's no pseda involved on the face of it. The master is not going to lose anything out by having the eved hang around by him. Well, we're going to see in a second. There might be cases where young. Okay. So, and yet we see that he's allowed to hit him, and he's not held liable in basis to that. Ovid Inish Din Lanakshay, even when there's no pseda. Rav Nachman, yes, not according to Rabbi Huda. The answer is Chochav Ma'eskin, but Avda Ganva. Yes, but we could be talking about it, but you will suffer a loss. Suppose that this Eved is a Ganav. You stand to lose if he stays around by your house.
Obviously.
He's going to steal.
Obviously.
Well, the question is, first, I mean, we have to figure, how does that work? What's the logic? Up until now, this guy was never stealing. All of a sudden, now you're expecting he's going to start stealing. The answer is, yes, the logic is, you could figure that up until now, he was scared of his master. He was in awe of him, or fear, or whatever it is. Therefore, he was afraid to steal. Here he feels, you know what, I'm free anyway. I can do whatever I want. Therefore, there is a logical reason to think that he might actually do that in a case like this. And so there you have a case.
With him. He wasn't afraid, and suddenly he was afraid, and now he doesn't.
Why? Up until now, this guy is my master. If I miss, if I step out of line or whatever, he can beat me, or he can whatever.
Now
he's trying to force him out, and he ends up hitting him, but he didn't go to do it deliberately. Is the point?
No, but he can think if I don't.
But he didn't know that. Again, this happened by accident. But the point is, the guy may figure that, you know what, now that I'm free, okay, I'll hang around you. I'm not his evident anymore. If I steal, he'll take me to Beis Din. Fine, he'll take me to Beis Din. I'll deal with it then. But at least, you know, So therefore, you could argue that here is a case of if pseida, and again, Rabbi Yehuda will have no problem with you with Ovid Inish Din Lanakshay, a case like this. Rav Nachman gives a different answer, that this situation over here actually has nothing to do with the question of Ovid Inish Din Lanakshay. This is an entirely different issue. The Eved Shemosel Rabba Shifcha Knani. We are talking about a case where an Eved was given a Shifcha Knanis by his master, which we learned back in Kiddushin, that the master has the right to do that, and then the children belong to him as Avadim. So, Ad Ha'idna Hatera V'Hashti Isura. Up until now, it was Mutter for him to have her. Now that he's no longer an Eved, it's also for him to be with her anymore. So he wants to return back and remain by his master. Why? So he can remain with his Goyish wife. That already, you're not hitting him because he's about to cause you a loss, such as in the previous example where he's a ganav. You're hitting him to prevent him from doing an aveira. That's not Ovid Inish Din Lanakshay.
Until he was, during the time he was an aveira, there was no aveira.
There was no aveira. Now, from now on, once the oval came, there is an aveira involved, just like there would be for any regular Ben Yisrael to be with a shiftless man. So therefore, you're allowed to. Which actually, now these couple of lines... These couple of words over here, and what Rashi adds to it, but Rashi says that therefore you have permission to begin with to hit him and prevent him. There was a vast amount of discussion about this among the Rishonim and Achronim, as you can imagine. First of all, Rashi seems to be implying that you can do that even like a chila. But for example, the Rambam Paskins, based on the wording to actually hit the guy to prevent him from doing an aveira. Rashi seems to be saying you can do that with Chila. Actually, not just seems to be. Rashi says, on the other hand, the Rambam, for example, because it's his, he's allowed to. on the other hand, the Rambam, for example, when the Rambam brings this in, the Braisa had said, if the master hit him and wounded him, then he's potter. And the Rambam takes that as implying that it's not a chaskila. But yeah, if you hit him, then fine. But not a chaskila, you're allowed to go and hit somebody to be ma'akvish me'isura. There's a further discussion about it. Does this apply across the board? Or maybe even according to Rashi, the chaskila, does it maybe only apply to somebody who you have control over? Like in this case, this guy up until now was under your control. He was your Evan. You have a certain responsibility over him. Does it just mean necessarily that walking down the street, you see somebody doing an Aveira where you have nothing to do with him? Does that give you license to hit him? Lavdavka. On top of that, the Maharshal points out another thing. The Maharshal says this whole concept doesn't necessarily apply to just any person has permission to hit somebody else and say, I'm doing it to prevent him from doing an Aveira. If you have somebody who's known to be a Yorei Shamayim, then yes, but otherwise, a person off the street to go and say I'm hitting him, the marshal says you don't have the shit to do such a thing
because you know he's
you may know that he's doing an avera, fine, but you know
not the Yorei Shamayim.
No, you yourself, the hitter, have to be known as the Yorei Shamayim in order to have license.
It's not shifta.
What?
It's shifta. That's why it's more.
That's what I'm saying. That's one argument among the Shoinim. I think the Rosh says that you have the responsibility over here because you were his master up until now. Mashenkin, if you see somebody on the street doing Avera, yeah. So then, like I say, there is a great deal of discussion about all this. Yeah. Aside from all of this, by the way, there's an interesting point that a couple of Meforshim bring out. I mean, so in all these cases of Ovid Inish Dinul Nafshi, aren't you effectively then, can't you say that you're doing it in order to prevent the guy from doing an Issur of Gezel? And the answer is that Rashi uses the expression over here that in this case, the high din lav lanafshi. In this case, this din is not for yourself. Meaning, in other words, when you have a vested interest, when you have something to gain from it, then you don't have this license of saying saying you can hit him in order to prevent him from doing that better. Or in a case like this,
then I agree that you don't.
It's not a question. Again, Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Nachman, I'm not even talking about. Well, no, again, Rabbi Nachman is saying you can, but not necessarily as far as hitting. Rabbi Nachman would say, for example, let's say that you can take the barrels and break them, for example, or you can go directly into the guy's house and say Shaliyani Noitel or whatever, all the various cases that we mentioned so far, or in the original case that Gemara mentioned that led to this whole discussion. You know, the guy is taking water on the day that's not his. You can go start hitting him with a spade to get him to stop, but not. But as far as this, what we're talking about, to hit a person to prevent him from doing an Aveira, that would depend, according to Rashi in particular, the way that a number of Mepharshim explain Rashi, only if you don't stand to gain anything from it do you have maybe license to do that. Again, according to the Maharshal, also you have to be a Yorei Shamayim, but if you have something to gain from it, you may have the right of an Inish Din L'Nafshi, but that doesn't necessarily extend as far as hitting. Tashmana, come, let's prove from our Mishnah. Amaniach sakad b'shus rabim. We said that if somebody puts his barrel down in a shus rabim, uvach of a nitka b'vashavra, somebody else comes and trips over it and breaks it, potter. The implication is time of the nitka b'vashavra. Why are we saying he's potter only because of an accident? He tripped over it, so therefore you can't mechayev him for breaking it. Hashavra chayev. It seems to imply that if he deliberately broke it, he would be chayev. Now, before, in the Gemara previously on Chav Zayin Amud Beis, there was a multi-way machlokes with what the situation is in the Mishnah. Rav had said that the case was that the person who put the barrels down filled up the entire width of the Shus Rabim, so there's no room to get by without breaking something. And that's why that's exactly why if he tripped over it and broke it, you potter according to Rav. There's a seder over here. You can't get through. You can't get through to your destination.
Can't you say it's a bar and the owner should be hired?
Well, that's what we said. That is why the Mishnah said that the Mishnah said that if the person who was walking by got injured, then the owner of the chavis is going to be responsible. Yeah. That's
what we're just talking about. The
you were just talking about the, no. You were just yeah. We were talking about the chiyu for breaking the cab itself.
Right.
So according to Rashi,
there is an injury, obviously.
That's a different matter. Yeah, but that's a different matter. We're not getting to that. And actually, actually, the Gemara dealt with it briefly yesterday, that one possibility was that actually even if you deliberately broke it, you'd be potter. But here, we're saying, going back to what Rav was saying over there, the case is you filled up Rishus Rabim completely. In that case, there is a pseudo, in that case, there is a loss involved because you can't get through. And the implication is that if you deliberately broke the chavis, you would be chayav. So according to Rashi, actually, the question now is not only on Rabbi Yehuda, like all the previous questions, now the question is on Rabbi Nachman as well. Rabbi Nachman says that Rabbi Yehuda said where there's no pseudo, but he agrees with the pseudo you can. Rabbi Nachman says either way you can block that on the face of it. Yeah. Now there are other Mefarshim, Rabbi Hananel and others that argue that maybe not, that maybe there isn't, maybe it's not considered a pseudo. And then in that case the question is still in that case the question is still. Yeah.
So what about those who are Rabbi Nachman?
So again, now the question is on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nachman. How is it that the Mishnah is implying that if you broke these barrels deliberately, you'd be chayiv? According to Rav Nachman, regardless whether it was a pseudo or not, you should be allowed to break them. And according to Rav Yehuda, at least if it's a pseudo, you should be allowed to. So why is the Mishnah implying that you're chayiv? By the way, the Rosh explained.
Shama means intent. Shava means with intent.
By the way, the Rosh points out that is why according to Rashi's understanding that from now on the questions are going to be on both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nachman. That is why the Gemara waited with the proof from all Mishnah all the way until now and first brought in a few Braises. Why didn't it start? Usually the Gemara would start by asking from a Mishnah and only then move to Braises, because up until now we were asking only on Rabbi Yehuda, and from now on we're asking on Rabbi Nachman as well. Amar of Zvid Mishmei de Rava, so the same answer as the Gemara said yesterday, that Rav Zvid said in the name of Rava, Hu Adin Afilu Shavra, that actually the truth is the Mishnah does not mean to imply that if you broke it deliberately you'll be chayev. In a case like that, even if you broke it, you would actually deliberately you would be potter. The Haidir Katani Nitkal, the only reason the Mishnah mentioned that he tripped, Haidir Kaboy Lemisni Sefer, because the Mishnah needed to continue with the case in Huzak, that if he got injured by Baal Chavis Chayev Benitzkoy, that the owner of the Chavis is going to be responsible for the damages, which in that case is Dafka Nitkal. Now in that case, that tactic only applies if he tripped on it. Aval Shavar Loy, but if he actually deliberately broke the barrels, you can't make the owner of the barrels Chayev for any Nizakim that results from that. Who Isaac Nafshe? Because after all, he, the person that did the breaking, caused that himself. He made over there. Now there were sharp pieces and water spilled all over the place and whatever. And he went.
This Rav Zvid's opinion, or it's,
well, he's bringing in the name of Rava, but
in the name
of Rava. But that. No, well, the point is that we could answer when we're asking that the Mishnah, according to Rav at least, seems to be hard to understand, according to either of Nachman or of Yehuda, we can answer that no, because Rav would say that when the Mishnah says that you broke, that only if you tripped, you potter, actually you'd be potter even if you broke them. But on the other hand, the difference is if you're nizek by the broken pieces or the water or what have you, then it'll depend whether you broke them deliberately or not. So therefore, katani reisha nitkal. Therefore, the first part of the Mishnah had to mention specifically the case where the case where he tripped, but not because only in the case where he tripped can he sue the other guy for his own nizakim. He himself got injured by the broken pieces.
If he doesn't trip,
but if he is. If he deliberately broke them, then he can't. Tashma, a braisa says, the pasuk says in Parshas Kisetze, a case, two people are fighting, the wife of one of them comes to save her husband, and the pasuk says, she reaches out and grabs a hold of the sensitive area. So the pasuk says, v'katsoisa es kapo, you should chop off her hand. Now, that doesn't mean you literally chop off her hand. It means mummery. It means you make her pay for the boshes, for the embarrassment that was involved. There was no injury necessarily. She didn't rip off anything, but there was embarrassment involved that he's humiliated like that publicly. Maybe, you know, but specifically we're focusing over here on the boshes. There are other places, by the way. There is a different place, I think it's Sanhedrin, where the Gemara discusses that the Chatzos Es Kapo can also have a literal meaning, namely in the sense, actually the Gemara itself is going to mention it over here without the derivation from the Pasuk, that it's also talking about a case when you have a Roidif, when you have one person pursuing another one with intent to kill. If you can stop them by injuring a limb, then you're responsible to do that. The Chatzos Es Kapo, you literally cut off her hand if that's enough to make her stop attacking this guy. Anyway, but here we're focusing on the other angle on it, which is the Chassidus says Kappa teaches us the concept of Boshet.
Oh, so, that's
my lav, Ksheini Yechol, Lahatul Aydeh Davacha. Now, Lachura, aren't we talking about over here a case where she couldn't have tried to save her husband any other way? So then it's a case of Ovid Inish Dinu L'Nafshei. Again, Rashi learns over here that we're talking there is Ikup Seda, because her husband is going to end up getting injured during the fight, and therefore she's trying to mix in order to save her husband. So again, if you have a question on both Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Nachman, again, Rabbi Hanano would learn that it's a question only, that it's a question of that's a case of Lekup Seda, and therefore the question is only on, It all depends, I guess, what kind of fight it is. I don't know, are we talking about the other guy is about to kill him, or we're just talking about that, you know, he's going to have a couple of black and blue marks for a couple of days. I don't know. Anyway, the answer is no. Assume that it's a case where she could have saved him some other way. In that case, it's not even a case, Tosfos points out, in that case, it's not even a question of Obed Inish Dinu L'Nafshei. If she had some way of saving her husband, if she had some other way of saving her husband, short of reaching and trying to grab the guy, then she's obligated to do that. The same way as with a roidif, you're responsible to do the least possible thing that'll save his victim.
What's it called in English? Proportional.
Proportional force, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Then the question. Okay.
Even if he didn't have shekhola
No, if. If she could have done something else, to save her husband, she is obligated to do that. And if she doesn't, then yes, she's chayav for any nezik that she causes. Okay. So the question is, so what are you implying? If there was no other way to do it, you would be implying that she would actually be potter. In that case, the problem is, then let's look at the next part of the braisa that says, v'sholcha yoda, the pasuk says that when the braisa says that when the pasuk is v'sholcha yoda, she stretches out her hand, means when she's doing it sort of as an optional thing, praplo shliach beis din. As opposed to, for example, if a shliach beis din goes and and causes somebody public humiliation, he would be potter because that's his job. He's responsible to do it as part of what beis din is telling him to do. And if that means, for example, giving the guy a slap in public, let's say, and that's boshes, fine, he's potter. So then, the point is, what is the braisa saying? There's a distinction between this woman versus a shliach beis din. If you're going to tell me that within her herself that there's a distinction, could she have used some other method? Could she have used some more proportionate method or not? Then the braisa should have made that distinction within itself. Don't drag in the shliach beis din. Mention within her herself, the medvar mamun, when do we obligate her to pay for boshes? If she could have saved her husband some other way and she instead chose to go for the jugular, but if she hadn't been able to save him any other way, she would be potter. The fact that the braisa doesn't make that distinction seems to imply that regardless, whether she could have done davaracha, whether she couldn't have, she's chayev. The chassoy says kappa, you make her pay. Now again, if you say that this is a case of ikup seda, that her husband was at risk of serious bodily injury, let's say, then it's a question on both Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Nachman, why she should be chayav of a dinish dinu l'nafshei when there's a seda. If you say, like Rabbi Hananel, that there's no seda involved over here, fine, then the question is on Rabbi Nachman, like the previous cases.
Yeah, so there's a dinish case you can do it.
The answer is, actually, that's exactly what the braisa means. When the braisa brings in the shliach beis din, it means to draw a comparison. When does this apply that we're mechayev her when she could have saved her husband with some less intrusive method? But if she could not have, not that the shliach beis din is a whole other case. She effectively is standing in the place of a shliach beis din in that case, and therefore she would be potter. Yeah, it is a distinction within her herself. Toshma, Hareish Shahoita Derech Harabim Oiveres Pesech Sadeu, a Braita says, actually I think it's a Mishnah, it's in Bava Basra, suppose a person had a public road passing through the middle of his field, Nutla, now let's say he took away this road, he decided I don't want them to be using this anymore, it's in the middle of my field, it's a hassle for me, but Nasam Lahamin Atzad, and instead he gave them an equivalent road around the side of his field, Masha Nosan Nosan, so whatever he gave them, they were allowed to keep it as a public road. But he doesn't get back what belonged to him, meaning he loses both, basically. He lost the original road they're still allowed to continue using, and they're allowed to use the new road as well. Now, the Iyamut of the Inish Dinil and Afshe, now, if you're going to tell me a person can take the law into his own hands, so then and Rashi points out, we're saying that Masha Nosan Nosan, implying that what he gave them has validity. So in that case, then, it should be, we should also say, Obed Inish Dinil and Afshe, to get back the original road that he wants to now reclaim for his own field.
The outside road.
The middle road. He had a road running down the middle of his field.
Right.
Instead, he wants to give them a road on the side.
Right.
We're saying both of them now belong to the Rabbim. Right. Now, the fact that we're saying this one belongs to the Rabbim implies, in other words, it was a valid thing for him to do. He's able to give this to the Rabbim. Well, in that case, it ought to be valid that he can take back this one for himself. In that case, let him Ovid Inish Dinil and Afshe. Limket Paz Rabbi Yosef. Let him, Revelative. So let him sit there with a stick. And then sit by the entrance of this road over there. And anybody who wants to pass through, he'll make them go home. And then that way they'll end up all going on the side. Tosus points out, okay, I mean, we would have to assume Ovid Inish Dinil and Afshe, just because practically speaking, he can't possibly summon everybody to base him. It's Abim. So therefore, you would think he ought to be able to take the law into his own hands. Omer was Vid Meshmeh Rava, so as Vid says in the name of Rava, it's true, in principle he could. However, Gzeira Shem Yitin Lehem Derech Akolosa. However, why do we make a Gzeira and say that he loses both of them? The new road that he gave them is valid, but also the old one still remains valid as well. Because what happens if we make a Gzeira because we, just in case, instead, the new road that he gives them is a crooked one, which is more of a hassle to travel on. So in order to as a Gzeira to prevent that, we don't want him taking back his old road and giving them a new road instead. So why he ends up losing the new road as well, that the Gemara is going to deal with in a few lines. But for the moment, we don't allow him to take back his old road, because what if the new road is less convenient, is more crooked?
Eminent domain.
Crooked, yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay. Rav Meshavshi says a little differently. B'noisim lahem derech akolosim. We're not talking about a gzeira that he might give them a crooked road or a less direct road. We're talking about if he did. Which the difference would be
if he actually
gave them a crooked road. In other words, according to the Zvid, no matter what kind of new road he gave them, you always make him liable for both. Whereas according to the Meshavshi, if he actually gave them a straight road in return, then it would be fine. Rav Ashi has a different way of looking at it. Kol menatzad derech hakolosin. Actually, any time he gives them a road that's on the side, that in and of itself is derech hakolosin. It's a crooked road of necessity, in the sense that kreivel ozer rochel ozer, because now it's closer for some people, but it's further away for some people. So therefore, in other words, so the Rashbam points out in Baba Basra that it comes out basically Rav Ashi is saying essentially the same thing as the previous Amudoi. I mean, just he's giving a logical reason, regardless of whether it was actually Derech HaKolosin or not, the very fact that it's a new road, that itself constitutes Derech HaKolosin. It constitutes a crooked road because now you're making it less convenient for some people.
And therefore, Beis Din
can tell him, the one that you gave, fine, you gave, for reasons that we're going to talk about now.
But the other one
in the middle still remains a public road and you don't have the right to it. Okay, so I mean, the Meiri does say, not everybody agrees with this,
but the
Meiri, that's the halacha, but I mean, the halacha is that he loses both. As the Meiri does point out, he has a shita, that's fine. I mean, if the two roads are equally convenient, there really is no korev lozev or rochek lozev, then fine, you know, it would be, then it would be koifin al midas zoyf to make him lose both.
Right.
We're not talking about that. So the question is, in that case, why doesn't he get back his original road? Or Tosfos has a different gear. The question isn't so much according to Tosfos why he doesn't get back his original road. The question is, why does the new road become the property of the Rabbim now? If we're saying we don't want him giving any new road, then fine, let him take back whatever he meant
to do. That's
very
logical, because if you say the new road is not as convenient, then why
yeah.
is it not? Falling in the rabbim,
Let him tell them, fine, you want to keep your old road, fine, keep your old road, give me back my new one, or the other way around, maybe, whatever. The point is, the answer is Mishum de Rabbi Yehuda. The reason he can't do that is because of something Rabbi Yehuda said. Dama Rabbi Yehuda, Meitav Shech Zikubur Rabbim, once you have a border Mesa means a border, meaning like an area that the rabbin have taken possession of. Also, the kalkula, you're not allowed to ruin it. So once you have, in other words, we're not just talking about that he designated this is going to be a road for the rabbin, and, you know, in a couple of days we're going to have the official ribbon cutting ceremony or whatever. We're talking about he said I'm going to be giving this road to the rabbin, and the rabbin had in fact already started using it. So then at that point he can't be mekalkel anymore.
He's not mekalkeling it. He gave it. He didn't change the external road.
He did.
He gave it.
He gave it in the sense that now they started walking along it.
Mekalkel
would mean, for example, that he would take it back and start planting it or whatever. Now they can't. So now it becomes unusable. Once they've made a chazaka on it, then you can't.
That's a stretch. I understand Rabbi Yehuda saying you cannot destroy something that you've given to the rabbin.
But that's what we're saying. You gave it to the rabbin, and they already started using it. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about that you designated you're going to be giving it to them, and they haven't started using it yet. They've already started using it. Therefore, at that point, you become...
How long? We're talking about a day?
I don't know.
About a week?
I don't know.
Month?
I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe even only a day. I actually saw one explanation that comes down to when you give it to the rabbin, it's kind of the equivalent of giving it to Hekdesh. And in that sense, there's no time limit on it. Once given and they use it, yeah. Okay, but there's a certain similarity there. Anyway, the point is you don't have a proof one way or the other from this about Ovid Inish Dino Napshe, because based on all this, Itaka does not have the right to do Dino Napshe. Toshma. Balabai's Sheniach Peya Mitzadechod. Let's take another case. The Balabas designates Peya on one end of his field, Ubo Aniyim Menotel Mitzadechod. Instead, the Aniyim came and took from the other end of the field. Zev is their Peya. Both of them are Peya. Now, why? The Iyamit Ovid Inish Dinil Napshe. If a person is allowed to take the law into his own hands, again, Linkat Pazra, Amai Zev is their Peya, Linkat Pazra Velasiv. Again, why shouldn't he have the right to sit at one or the other of those places with a stick and tell the Aniyim, go away from here, your Peya is elsewhere? The answer is Omar Rav Amai Zev is a Peya L'Poitrin and Amai. So you're right. We don't mean they're both Peya in the sense that the Aniyim are allowed to take both of them. We mean they're both Peya in the sense that both of them are considered Hefker and they're Potter from Meiser. When Tosfos says that it's not technically a matter of Hefker. The point is that it was Hefker at one point. You designated Peya is supposed to be a Midir Abonin, supposed to be 1/60th of your field. So you designated at this end 1/60th. Instead, the Aniyim came and took 1/60th from this end. What we're saying is, because this part of here was Hefker at some point, even though you took possession of it again, it remains Potter from Meiser. Rashi learns it's a matter of Hefker. Tosfos learns a little differently.
So
it's not technically a matter of Hefker.
The other side should be going back.
The other side, they ended up taking. They ended up taking from this side. They took the whole 1/60th from this side. The point is, therefore, you are allowed to keep this part. But you're allowed to keep this part for yourself, and it's payer in the sense that you gain now. You don't have to pay Meiser.
It's yours, but you won't pay Meiser.
Right. So again, Rashi says it's a matter of it being Hefker.
If it's yours, why wouldn't you pay
Because
Meiser?
It was Hefker. It was Hefker. Tosfos says a little differently. Not so much that it was Hefker, but it's a special din that applies to pay. Whatever. The point is, Kedetanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Hamaskeres Kamei, suppose somebody declares his vineyard Hefker, the Hishkim Baboker Butzer, and then he woke up the next morning and took possession of it again and harvested it. So, okay, we learned in Nedarim that Midrabanan, to avoid things like that, you have to be Maskeres in front of three people, but according to the original Din Daraisa, you could be Maskeres even in private, yeah. So he was Maskeres Field, and Hishkim Baboker Butzer, and he woke up in the morning and harvested it. Chayev peret of oilus of a shikov peya. He will be chayev in most of the matnas aniyim commit. Peret, individual grapes that fall down, which are the equivalent of leket. Oilus, which is not fully developed clusters of grapes. The shikha, anything that he forgets that he forgets that's unharvested. Or peya. Or potter min amaiser, but he's going to be potter from maiser because as long as it was some kind of hefker, then Meiser doesn't apply to it anymore. So even though it was only Hefker temporarily, and similarly in this case with the Peya at the two ends of the field, since it was Hefker temporarily, or again, according to Tosfos, because of the special din that applies to Peya, then you pass it from Meiser. So that's what I mean, Zev is that Peya. Not in the sense that he can't tell the Aniyim, go away from this end. You already took your whole 1/60th from the other end, but in the sense that he won't be Chayiv and Meiser. So in the end, the bottom line is, after all this back and forth, there is no conclusion. However, the halacha is usually like Reb Nachman when it comes to dinim amanus, and that is how it is over here. That Ovid Inish Dinim Amanus, even where there's no hefsed involved. With that said, there is a lot of discussion among the Rishonim and Achronim that limits this, that limits the applicability of this. Among others, there's different opinions about it among the poskim, but one of them is, does it apply only to cases like we're talking about over here, cases of Gezel or Nezikin or whatever, or does it even apply, let's say, for example, the guy owed you money. Are you allowed to, let's say, of an innocent
amount?
Yeah. And there's different opinions about it. The halacha is you have to look in Shulchan Aruch. There's different opinions about it. There's the Mechaber and the Rama, among others. There is an interesting other detail about it, which is, what about if you have in your possession a pekadon that belongs to him, and he previously deposited with you? Are you maybe allowed to keep that pekadon to pay off the debt? Some poskim say yes. Others say no, and actually there's an interesting thing. The Zohar has some very harsh words for somebody who does that. The Zohar says that basically, look, you know, the Eibishte is masked your neshama, the Eibishte is masked your neshama in you every day. It goes back a mile when you go to sleep. The Eibishte gives it back to you in the morning. Don't do the opposite to somebody else. Keep this pekudin for what he owes you. Otherwise, you know, why shouldn't the Eibishte do the same thing to you, basically? So there are a number of Achronim will bring that Zohar and say that's al pi halacha. That is a valid point. In Kutus and Yonash,
to say the halacha is and
maybe Ovid Inish Dino Nafshe, but again, not when it comes to Nizokin or things of that nature. Not when it comes to example for a regular Choy. And actually, if you look in Kundras and Yonash Alteres Achsidus, that has a long discussion about the various aspects of Moida'ani. One of them is that when we say Moida'ani every morning, it reflects this halacha that you're responsible to return the pekadon every day. Just like we know when a poor person gives you a pekadon, you're a mashkin, whatever, you're responsible to return it every day. And the halacha is that you're not allowed to keep the pekadon for yourself, even if the other guy owes you money. And that it works out. Chassidus also that again, you know, you may owe the Eibishter a lot in the sense that you haven't done everything that's expected of you, but the Eibishter doesn't keep your neshama by him; he sends it back down to you in the morning.
So there's a split between halacha and ethics.
No, on the contrary, we're saying that Ovid Inish Dinah L'Nafshe, but it had those rules to it, those details to it.
Right.
Sometimes it applies, and among the rules are that it may apply. Among the rules are, according to many poskim, that it applies only to nizakin and things like that, not to chovis. Okay.
Right. But the chovis, you can.
Chovis, you can't do Ovid Inish.
You can't.
In nizakin, you can. Okay. Let's go on. Mishnah says, Nishpura kadeh b'rishus rabim, suppose that somebody's jug or barrel or whatever broke in rishus rabim, v'chuchlak echa b'mayim, and another person slipped in the water, v'shalaka b'charsis, or he was injured by the broken pieces of earthenware.
Chuchlak is what?
Chuchlak means he slipped. V'shalaka b'charsis, so he was injured by the broken pieces of earthenware. Chayev. So the owner of the barrel is chayev. Rabbi Yehudah, miskaven chayev. If he meant to do it, he's chayev. But ain't a miskaven potter. If he didn't mean to do it, he's potter. What we mean by meant and not meant, the Gemara is going to talk about later on at the bottom of Chofes in the Beis. We'll probably do it tomorrow. So the Gemara starts off. Amar Rabbi Yehudah, Amar Rav. Lo shanu ela shetinfu kela b'mayim. This that we're saying, the owner of the barrel is chayev, is only if the other person's clothes got dirtied in the water. You know, some folks talk about, are we talking maybe about clothes that once they're dirty, that's it, they're goners, or is it even talking about clothes that just got dirtied, which can be washed, but maybe washing them, maybe the fact that they were dirtied itself is considered a hazard. Anyway, Abel, who asked my potter, but the person himself, if he just slipped on the water and banged, and then got banged up on the ground, the owner of the barrel would be potter. Because then we can say that the ground, which is hefter, it belongs to everybody, that injured him. Meaning, Rashi says like this. Rav is explaining the case that the person still retains ownership of the water. The water is spilled on the ground, but in principle, you know, he could maybe gather it up and still use it for something or other. So therefore, Rav will say, as the Gemara is going to teach out, this water therefore is considered his mamon. So now your clothes got dirty in it very well. It's the equivalent of your shirt damaging somebody else's clothes, where you'll be chayev, therefore he's chayev. The person himself, on the other hand, if you would argue that's more like a case of a burr, where Rav himself talks about later in the Masechta that when the Torah is machayev for injuries or deaths involving a burr, the problem is not so much the fact that something falls into the burr and gets banged on the bottom of the burr, but rather the fact that a burr has stagnant air in it, and the animal or whatever it is that falls in there suffocates. Here, there's not that issue. It's water lying on the ground. So therefore, the water is essentially sort of a grumma for the fact that he got banged up. He got banged up by the ground, and therefore the owner of the water would be puzzled. That's not. Kiyam Rita Kameh to Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda says, when I told over this explanation to Shmuel.
So Rav, in summary, Rav says what?
So Rav says you'd be chayev for the owner of the water, leaving aside the broken barrel itself, the water we're talking about. The person slipped on the water. You'll be chayev for his clothes that got damaged by the dirty water, but you'll be potter for any of the guy's own injuries.
If the owner of the jar is different from the owner of the water.
No.
The water came from the jug.
The water came from the jug.
Yeah,
and the person who...
The jug belongs to... Let's say the jug belongs to someone and the water belongs to someone else. Who is chayev?
The Bashta is still the one who dropped the jug because the fact is he had the water in his possession. He's a shomer. Same as any other case where you have an ox, for example, and you give it over to a shomer. As long as the shomer is not a cheresh of a cotton, then that guy, that shomer is responsible, yeah. So Kiyam Ritzah Kameh to Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda says, when I told over this vote to Shmuel, Amali says, how does that work? Mechti Avne v'sakim asoim v'bori l'manu. After all, where do we learn the whole concept? We learned back in the first parak that if you have a stone or a knife or a bundle that were left in Rosh Hashanah, or we're actually talking about their case where they fell off a roof, whatever, and somebody got injured by them. Mibori l'manu. All of them we derive from the case of Bor. So the case of a burr, the Torah tells us, you hire for a shur that gets killed in a burr, meaning as opposed to an adam, a person gets killed by a burr, your potter, chamur v'lekelim. Similarly, you hire, the Torah says, shur to chamur, implying, but not an adam and not kelim. So you're potter. So Adarabi, you should be potter for the kelim, you should be potter for the clothes.
Adam or kelim get injured in a burr?
No, you get killed in a burr. Well, in a case of an adam, that's the
story.
Yeah, right.
In a
yeah. Wait. The hanimul in chtola and Shmuel continues. Now that is talking about as far as death in a burr. A person, you'll be potter for a person falling into a burr and dying. You know, the Meshech Chachma gives a logical reason. People usually look where they're walking. Okay, we said yesterday in derech benadam is burning bedrachim. But still, if you know that a pit is there, you're going to look out for it.
Today with cell phones, you know.
Yeah. Okay. When it comes avla in nezakin, adam chayev kelim turim. But okay, when it comes to a nezek, a person who gets injured in a burr, you're going to be chayev for it. But kelim, you'll still be potter. So in this case, Adarav Shmuel argues it should be the other way around. You should be chayev for the person's injuries when he slipped on the water. You should be potter for the injuries or whatever that is close of his clothes for the damage to his clothes.
If you
yeah. Rav would answer to that. Hani mila hech daktorinu. Yes, Rav would say, but that's true only if you were maskir. Rav holds the whole concept of a burr is only where you were maskir, where you maskir your burr and your rishut. But if you were not maskir it, then instead it's your mamun. That water, therefore, is not considered a burr. Rather, it's considered your mamun, the equivalent of a shur. And when it comes to a shur, you're chayev for kalim. You're not potter for a shur damaging kalim. And the only reason I'm pottering for the injuries to the person is because he wasn't directly injured by the water. He was injured by hitting the ground. The water was only a grumma.
Could have slipped on the water.
That's what we're talking about. He slipped on the water, but still, the water was a grumma. The water was meaning an indirect cause. The water itself didn't harm him. If it had been a jug full of sulfuric acid, that would be a little different, you know. Oil also doesn't directly damage him. I'm saying, you know, if it was full of bleach or something and it directly harmed him, that's different, you know. Yeah. Okay, Masiv Raboshia. Raboshia says, I have a contradiction to this whole discussion. A Braisa says, when the Pasuk says, V'nafal shama shara chamer, that a shara chamer fall into a burr, again, shara teaches us v'loy adam, that you're not chayev for a person who falls into a burr and gets killed. Chamer v'loy kelim, chamer implying but not kelim. Mikan amru, based on this, the Chachamim said, Nafal osecha shara v'kelim v'nishtabru, suppose that a shara with its gear falls into a burr and the gear breaks. And Rashi points out the gear of a shara would usually be things like a yoke, which were hard things that break. Chamur v'kelev v'niskaru, or a donkey and its gear, where its gear is usually a soft thing, like a saddle, falls in and gets ripped. Chayev ala behemo, potter ala kelev. And you chayev for the death of the end of the animal, but you're potter for the harm to the kelev. Hol maza doima, and the braisa continues, because after all, what is this like? It's similar to the case of a stone or a knife or a bundle that you left in Rosh Hashanah, and they cause damage. And the Gemara interjects a second before we get to the question. Well, that's what we're saying. Yeah, those things are considered a bar. But the question is, first on the language, on the contrary, I mean, the case of a bar says in the pasuk. The case of Avdei Sakinei Masayot doesn't say in the pasuk. What are you saying? That the case of a bar is similar
around.
To, yeah, it should be the other way around.
The
case, it should be that,
right.
El, right, that's what the Braita means. My Doimel Ozeh, what is a similar case? Avdei Sakinei Masayot, Shein Ehem Rishas Ram Bezik. And the Braita says, L'Ficha, therefore, based on this concept, Im Hikiach L'Chiseh Be'Evin Chayim, if he broke his jug against the Tzolichas, is like a small jug, if he broke his jug against the rock, against the stone, chayev. Then the owner of the rock, the one who put the rock there, would be chayev. So we have to ask. This question is actually on both.
Reisha, okay, isn't it?
Wait, that's the problem. Reisha kasha l'Rav, sefer kasha l'Shmuel. The first part of the Braisa is the first part of the Braisa, which says that the stone or the knife or whatever is similar to a burr, is a kasha on Rav, because l'chora, you weren't necessarily machir the knife or the stone or the masa or whatever, and according to Rav, you only chayev a burr if you were machir it. So the first part is kasha is a kasha on Rav. The sefer kasha l'Shmuel, and the second part that says that if somebody broke his jug on the stone, he'd be chayev. It's Caleb. According to Shmuel, it's potter. It's burr. It should be potter. Yeah. The answer is really taimeich. Okay, never mind that. According to your own logic, actually he gufa. You can well ask a question within the braisa itself. Kasha reisha potter v'sefer chayev. Why is it the first part of the braisa? It's saying you potter on Kalim, and the last part says that if he broke your jug on the stone, you're chayav. So forget about Rav and Shmuel's opinions. The Braisa itself is self-contradictory. Ella Rav matires the time, or Shmuel matires the time. No, rather we can say that Rav and Shmuel will both be able to answer. Will both be able to answer the Braisa according to their svara, which will take care of the contradiction between the Reisha and the Sefer, and will also take care of the contradictions against Rav and Shmuel, because each of them will explain the Braisa according to their own shita. Rav matires the time as follows. When is this talking about that you're potter for the kalim is kshif kiran, if you maskew them, because only if you maskew them do they become a bird. Avaloyif kiran chayev, but if you are not maskew them, then they're still considered mamoinai, then it's not considered like a bird at all, then it's considered like a shur, and you chayev. Therefore, in a case where you weren't masking them, if the other guy broke his pitcher on the stone, then you'll be chayev.
And it goes to the first part.
So the first part is where you weren't masking them.
Right.
Where you were masking them. Therefore, it's a burr. The second part is you weren't masking them. Therefore, they're like a shur.
Right.
So and the first part, you're not chayev on kalim. Right. Yeah, and the second part, you are.
Right.
Or Shmuel matayos hatayme. Shmuel will explain the braisa according to his shita. That hashta the amrit avnit zakirim masayik kibore dummy. Once you establish, once the braisa has told us that a burr also includes cases of, for example, a rock or a knife or whatever that you left in Rosh Hashanah, that's considered like a burr, regardless whether you were masked or not. Because according to Shmuel, that doesn't make a difference. Rabbi Yehuda, the mechayiv on this kalim a burr. Then according to Rabbi Yehuda, who does not hold of that exception of kalim by a burr, as we'll learn later on in the Masechta
in
detail.
General.
Rabbi Yehuda is a Tana. So Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, holds that there's no exception for Kalim in a burr.
There's no exception
for Kalim in a burr. According to him, Therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the other guy broke his jug on your stone, then you will be chayav.
Now we're adding another element. We say you could explain the Mishnah only by the differences in opinion between Rav and Shmuel. Now we have to take the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda.
Fine, Shmuel can use Rabbi Yehuda's opinion to explain. Why not? The Braisa doesn't say who it's according to. He can say this Braisa is according to Rabbi Yehuda. One more detail on that. Amar of Allah, Zoloshanu Elisha Nitko Be'Evan Menisha Be'Evan. This that we're talking about, that you chayev for the jug breaking on the stone, according to Rav, where you weren't masquerade, and according to Shmuel, where it doesn't matter, according to Rabbi Yehuda. This is only talking about if the guy tripped over the stone and then the actual keli itself got banged against the stone and broke. But if the person who was carrying the pitcher was walking along, he tripped on the ground itself, and then the pitcher smashed against the rock and broke, then potter. Then the owner of the rock is going to be potter, because then the whole thing was originally caused by him falling on the karka, on the ground, and the ground is Rishabah. Okay, command the like of Nosson. So the question is, what would that be like? That seems to be not like Rav Nosson. Because Rav Nosson says, we have the case before, and we're going to have later on in the Masechta, that if a shur pushes another shur into a burr, so Rav Nosson says the owner of the burr is chayav for 3/4 of the payment.
And the
owner is 1/4, yeah, where the shur is the time, that is.
Right.
By the same logic over here, you can't collect from the karka, because it belongs to the public. You can collect from the Bala Evan. Why, according to that, you should be able to collect all of it. Half of it, at least, whatever. And the problem with that is, halacha is like Rav Nosson. We shouldn't assume that Rav Elazar is saying that like Rav Nosson. Ikadamri, so another version is, Amar Rav Elazar, loy tame of anitka ba'evan of nisha ba'evan hoda mechayed. Don't think that the case is only where the person tripped on the stone and the jug actually broke against the stone. Hoda mechayed is only in that case with the owner of the stone be chayed. El afilu nitka ba'kaukav nisha ba'evan chayed. No, even if the person tripped on the ground and then broke the jug against the stone, he would also be chayed command of nothing. That does follow of nothing. The original cause of the hezek was the ground, which is kaukav olam, and you can't collect from anybody because of it. But that led to it being broken against the stone, which again, according to Rav, you weren't makir the stone, so therefore it's considered mamone. According to Shmuel, it doesn't matter. We're going according to Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, in accordance with the opinion of Rav Nosson, you would be the owner of the stone is going to be higher for the nezek to the judge.
Rav Nosson says that when it comes from the ground,
whatever damage was done by the ground, you can't collect on it. The ground is hefker. Therefore, you go back to the owner of the stone and say, if not for your stone, my jug wouldn't have broken. Therefore, you're chayav for that.